Hi, my name is Catherine Connor, and I am with Curtis and Dolly Harrison in the Timminsville Public Library. I have reviewed the interview agreement between them and Southern Oral History Program, the University of North Carolina, Southern Historical Collection, where this interview will be deposited. Mr. Harrison has agreed to be interviewed, and Mrs. Harrison has agreed with some restrictions. And we're going to start proceeding now. Now, before I go, do y'all agree to again be interviewed with the restrictions that y'all have separately agreed to?
Yes.
Okay. So I've asked the Harrisons to be interviewed because they grew up in the Timminsville, Darlington County area in the 1950s, and they've been helpful so far in this project for me, but I also wanted to get their sense of what life was like in the 1950s. So Mr. Harrison began and told me that he had worked in a warehouse when he was growing up in various other jobs in the fields of tobacco, and that his family also rented a farm. So I'm just going to begin and ask you, Mr. Harrison, can you tell me a little bit more about your farm life and any of the lessons or values that you learned growing up in the rural South?
Yes, I can. I grew up here in the Timminsville area. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as you would look at it, I started to work at 5 years old. And I tell people this, they look at me amazed because I started working as a, they used to call it a tobacco drain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pulled by a horse. Or a mule, whichever one you had. In our case, we had a big horse that was a spinoff of the Budweiser horses. And our horse name was Dolly. It was kind of strange to see a five-year-old drive a horse that big,
right.
And back in those days. And so my rate of pay for driving the horse was 5 cents an hour. And even though I was very small, my father built a platform on the back of this tobacco drag that I could ride. And this was also a little different from what a lot of other youngsters did in those days. They walked behind it. But because of my size and because our horse was so big, I got to ride on my tobacco drag. And it was almost as if I were playing at the same time I was working.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will never forget the hot sun and the big straw hat. And one of the most refreshing times during that work period would be the time when we would stop for a drink of cold water. Life in the South in those days were somewhat harsh. We had to work out in the sun, and we had to work up until high noon. We only took off approximately 1 hour for lunch, and you worked until it was dark. In my early years, we worked on a farm owned by most of the land that was on our area was owned by white families. This farm was owned by a family that was very prominent on Center Road. It was the White family. Mm-hmm. There was Baxter White, George White, Duncan White, Dewey White, and they all owned connecting farms from Timminsville down to approximately 5 miles out of Timminsville. All of those farms were connecting farms. We lived on the Duncan White farm.
How long did you and your family live and work for Duncan White?
On and off, approximately 10 years.
Did you have any brothers and sisters who worked alongside you?
No. Okay. I was the only child.
So the people who worked along with you on the farm, I'm assuming it was your father, you already mentioned him, but what about your mother?
The people who worked on the farm were other farmers. All of the farmers who worked on the farm were sharecroppers. On the farm that we worked on, there were, on that particular area of the farm, there were approximately 7 families. And all of us worked in what would now be considered a co-op.
Okay.
We shared harvesting of our crops with each other. And that's how you were paid, because if they had more family than you had, you paid out more to get your crops harvested.
Mm-hmm.
Because time was kept for everyone who worked, even though the pay was very small, they all got paid. If you had more stringers, more people who handed the tobacco to the stringers, there's a process of harvesting, and everybody had a job. Mm-hmm. And this was, it was hard, but it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of your harvest week, when everyone got paid, everybody had some spending money. And I think this was a little bit different from a lot of the farms that was in the area, because we shared with each other, and we had a camaraderie that made us closer to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The way it worked out is, at the end of the work week, everybody had some money to spend. And even though when you would sell your crop, you had to pay it back,
mm-hmm.
but you also had money, and that was a little different from some of the other farms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the Duncan White and Dewey White were basically considered the larger farmers in the area, but they was also considered to be the more fair farmers in the area with their sharecroppers.
So you said that you worked there for 10 years. Can you, do you remember the precise dates from like 1940 to 1950?
The earliest I can remember would be about 1944.
Okay.
I remember a young man walking down the road going to catch a bus in Timminsville to go to Columbia,
mm-hmm.
to be examined for the military.
Were these white men or black men?
They were black men.
Okay. So, and I'm going to ask you another maybe improper question, but can I just get your year of birth? So
I can, my year?
Yeah, yeah.
1937.
1937. So I just place you in the time. Okay. So now the people that you mentioned, the black men who went to Columbia, were they also sharecroppers on the white farms?
They were sharecroppers. They were sons.
Sons of
sharecroppers. They were sons of the sharecroppers in the area. And, of course, there was a draft board set up in Timminsville that selected, if there were two sons and a mother had two sons, one son would be exempt to stay home to take care of the mother, but the other son would have to go and be exempt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what else changed in that you remember during that World War II period? Especially for African Americans around here, were there less men in the area? Did whites behave differently towards?
There were less black men in the area, young men, because a lot of young men were sent away to the service. And then I remember that the government actually started taking, because of the war was so stressful, the government actually started taking away and controlling more of what you would farm.
Mm-hmm.
So farming became less profitable for a period of time, and then we had a period where there was rationing, when things were being rationed.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have ration stamps to get different commodities. You had to have ration stamps to get meat, ration stamps to get different other things. And one of the basic things that they stopped was women could not get nylon stockings anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This was the era when it went from nylon stockings to cotton stockings. And cotton stockings were white. And they used to give you a package of red dye, so people would wear red dye stockings. Everybody knew they were cotton. And so basically a lot of black women, even around Timminsville, stopped wearing stockings, period, and started using Vaseline to grease their legs, because you couldn't get nylon stockings.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't get, there were a lot of things. You couldn't get shoes, you couldn't get shoe leather, couldn't get new shoes, so a lot of people, it was an era where people who could afford it had a lot of shoes repaired, soles put on,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't get leather soles because the government took most of the first grade stuff for the military.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the era where meats were rationed, as I stated before, and they went from, they started killing horses and using horse meat,
mm-hmm.
for bologna as well as for mutton. And so a lot of black people, when they would go to the store, instead of getting beef or pork, they got horse meat.
Mm-hmm.
Was something that people wasn't used to,
right,
here in the area. But that's all you could get. You couldn't get shortening. You couldn't get that was when margarine came into being. And margarine first came out, it had no color. And you used to get the package of color in it, and then you had to mix all of this stuff. So I remember those things as a young person. I remember the food changing,
mm-hmm.
in the area. But people started growing their foods, their garden. They started gardening. They started raising chickens. They started raising hogs, and that's how we went back to our original food chain.
Now, was your family, did they grow their own food even before this time period, or did they also start growing their own food during wartime because of the rationing?
Well, they grew some of it before that time, but a lot of family dynamics changed during that period. My father went away because crops, farming wasn't productive. And so farming became very unproductive during this period. It was a period of upheaval. My father went away to the WPA project, and he worked in Charleston on the WPA project there, where they cut that channel that now exists in Charleston. And he worked there for almost three years down there. I think that channel was cut. It was 17 miles wide. And they cut it right through the swamp there. And basically, the majority of the labor down there was black, who could not get jobs anyplace else. So they went down there to work. And their families, of course, if you didn't farm, you couldn't live in, you had to find whatever housing that was available because we didn't own the land. So you would get a house that wasn't usually used for farming. It was in the back someplace, and a lot less comfortable.
And so did you move with your father to Charleston during that time period, or you and your mom stayed here?
We stayed in Tempeville because we had extended family.
Okay.
Even though they were just two of us, I had my mother's aunt and uncle, which were more like my grandparents, and they stayed with us. They were quite elderly and not very well at all, and so they stayed with my grandmother doing some chores around the house. But my grandfather couldn't work at all, but they were a part of the family, and they were always included, and we took care of them until they passed away.
And when was that?
They passed away, my grandfather passed away, I think, in the very late 40s.
Okay.
And my grandmother, she passed away approximately about a year and a half after. So this was all in the 40s.
So, just help me understand just a little bit more about what you were doing during the kind of the war period when your dad was in Charleston. So you were still on the White farm.
Yeah.
Okay. So all the other families that you talked about a camaraderie, like you were a big cooperative. You worked in the fields, right?
I didn't work in the fields then, because my father was away. We didn't have a farm.
Right.
At that particular time.
Okay.
My father was at the WPA project.
Right.
My mother worked during the day at the White's house.
Okay.
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 And I had to stay and help my grandmother with her husband, who was very ill. So I was left home to help her with, she had to wash for him every day, and my job was to pump the water. But that was in my early years. I was approximately about 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
And I couldn't pump the water fast enough for her, so I got a whipping every day, or twice a day, or three times, or however many times she felt like it.
Yeah.
Because in those days, they washed clothes in tubs with the rug board, and they rinsed them about 4 or 5 times. So it was a lot of water for a 5 or 6 year old to pump.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't keep up.
So let's kind of shift to the late 40s when your dad comes back. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming he's coming, he comes back in the around that time period in the war it has ended. So can you tell me what back, goes to your family?
He came back when the government took their restrictions off of farming. The government had restricted farming to the point where it was not it wasn't productive or feasible for you to farm. But when they lifted the restriction, my father came back and we again started farming.
Okay. Uh-huh. And you stayed with the whites?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We were still on the same place, but we had moved from the house, and I don't want to call it the front house, but it was, the house out on the road to a house that was back in the field near the woods. Yeah, because you got housing according to your productivity, I would say.
Okay.
So you got the house that nobody wanted to live in that was back on the swamp,
mm-hmm.
or the edge of the swamp, and versus the house out on the road.
So, when did y'all's family move off the white farm?
Well, what we did was we moved off of his farm and we rented this farm, which was from another white, Baxter White, for about 2 years.
So would you explain to me the difference between renting a farm and sharecropping?
Well, there's a lot of difference there, particularly even in the Timminsville area. On the rented farm, we lived in a far superior house. That was the first difference.
Mm-hmm.
The second difference what you sold, you would get more because all you had to do was pay your rent out of it,
mm-hmm.
pay for your supplies out of it. Whereas on the sharecropper farm, half of everything you get, the first half, goes to the landowner.
Mm-hmm.
And you pay all your bills out of the second half. So you wind up with basically nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On this farm that we rented, we had control of what we sold.
Right.
And we had a car, we lived in the house that we lived in on that farm was actually a house that we built for white people.
Yeah.
So it had electric lights, it had, the pump was in the porch. And the house was painted white. The other houses we lived in had no paint on them.
Yeah.
Okay. The small house that we had out in the country, the pump was out in the field.
Right.
So you had to pump the water out there and then carry it to the house.
Mm-hmm.
The house that, when my father came back, that was the house we lived in when he was at the WPA. But the house that, when he came back, that house was right next to Duncan White's house.
Mm-hmm.
It was a basically an upgraded house. Had the house that we lived in back on the farm had shutter windows. You open and close the shutter window. And I had glass windows on the front. But on the back was shutters. The house that we lived in next to him had all glass windows. When we moved back to his house, he put electric lights in it. So you're moving, you're basically, you know, you're trying to upgrade your status.
Right.
We had two barns on the farm we rented.
Mm-hmm.
We had a corn barn, and we had a cotton barn, if you want to call it, cotton and tobacco. And these were separate barns. You didn't have to clean them out to try to clean out the horse barn to use it for tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
We had two separate barns, and the first barn The barns were even different, the gradings were different. They were built different. We hired people to work on the farm when we rented. We had to hire people to harvest because it was just three of us, my mom, my dad, and I. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to town and pick up people and bring them out to the farm, and they would help us harvest the cotton and the tobacco and whatever. And what we did was we had a kind of a barter system, mm-hmm. where in addition to paying them, they were able to harvest vegetables and whatever, mm-hmm. to take home with them at night. So they were glad to come out and work for us because they got a bonus.
Right.
At the end of the day, they had peas and corn and watermelons and you know, and that was the difference, because you can grow what you want when you're out there on the farm. When you're on the sharecropped farm, you're limited. You're told what fields, what lands, mm-hmm. to use, and so you're restricted in what you can do.
Okay, I have another question to follow that. Mm-hmm. So you were first with the Duncan White, and then you were with Baxter White.
Well, when we went to Baxter White, we rented that.
Right, exactly. So Baxter's the one he rented from you. So,
then we went back to Duncan White.
We went back to
Duncan White. But he gave us a better farm spot.
Okay.
Let me put it that way. Because after he found out, my father was after, he gave him a better farm spot and offered him more upgrades, more privilege. We had two barns, we had the horse, we could grow whatever we wanted. He let him select the fields he wanted. We had fruit trees and we could have a garden, nice big garden, and sugarcane. We raised hogs. We were more independent.
Right.
Okay. And also, my mother became the paymaster for the farm.
Can you tell me what that is?
The paymaster for the farm. Yeah, she paid off all of the different farmers. At harvest time, at the end of our harvest week, she did all the paying and bookkeeping.
Was this only for your farm or the entire?
For the entire farm. It would just go to the bank and get two sacks of money, a sack of coins and a sack of bills, and he would turn them over to her. And she would pay everybody off.
Do you think that, can you tell me why you think that they would have trusted your mother to do that?
We were the people who had been on the farm the longest, first of all, and because of my mother's reputation, she had worked in his house, she had worked for them, but they knew her to be a religious person of great integrity. And that's why they did it.
So before we began our conversation, you talked to me about your teenage years working at Pack House?
I worked at the warehouse. I packed back at the warehouse.
And how old were you when you did that?
I was 14.
Okay. So you went from the farm to the...
I went from that farm.
Okay.
See, we went from that farm. Now, we moved around quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But we went from that farm up to the Johnny Wilson farm.
Okay.
Because he brought the big farm up there. Now, my father was considered to be a very good farmer. Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons why he was known for being able to pick the right soil to plant certain things on, and he always was known to have a very good crop. And so it was kind of sought after by a lot of people. You know, Johnny Wilson needed someone that could help him because he had bought this big farm, this 500-acre farm, and he needed an anchor farmer to help him with his other farmers. He had four other farmers on that farm, but he needed somebody that could help them. Suggest to them where to plant their cotton and their tobacco and stuff like that.
Can you tell me the relationship between Johnny Wilson and your dad?
I think we gave him the same respect that we had given, because he was the landowner, and we gave him the same respect and the same diligence that we did on the other farms. My father basically prided himself on having a good farm. He prided himself on his reputation more than whatever. So we gave him the same. We gave him a day's work, and that's what you did on the farm. You didn't stuff off, basically, because you were working for yourself too. So actually, you tried to do your best work, and that's what we did. We stayed there with him for 2 years.
And did you go to another farm after that?
No, we built our own house after that.
Okay. Where did you build your house?
We built a house up on Honda Way.
Okay. How did your father afford it?
To build a house?
Yeah.
Now that's a story all by itself. My grandfather, who owned the land in Lynchburg, he owned quite a few acres of timber. And my father and I hand cut the timber, the logs, and cut the trees rather, the logs. My mother, my adopted parents, by the way. My mother that raised me was my grandfather's niece. So my grandfather gave us the trees. We bought the land that we built the house on, and he gave us the trees for the lumber. And we paid for the milling of the trees. And my uncle, who was a renowned carpenter and builder, built the house for us. So it was a combination of family and connecting with different people. That's how we built the house.
What year is that?
We built the house in 1952.
Excuse me.
That's okay. So, you mentioned that you said you were adopted, or your adopted mother?
That was my adopted parents.
Okay, so the ones we've been talking about.
Those are my adopted parents.
What happened to your birth parents?
My birth parent?
Right.
It went away.
Okay.
Tried to work out a life for itself.
Okay.
My adopted parents was my mother's. They were first cousin.
Oh, okay.
She was always in my life, but not as a parent.
Right. Okay. Sorry, I heard that, and I just wanted to make sure I heard it right.
Yeah, and I was just saying that because...
Explain the relationship with the grandfather.
I had a relationship with both sides of my parents. I don't my grandfather's farm. In fact, I was probably one of the only grandchildren that got a chance to walk around on his farm with him.
Right.
Because I was one of the older grandchildren.
Now, when you said that you had the house built on Honda Way, in 1952, and do you know how many, was it a fourth of an acre, half an acre, an acre, acres, more than that?
It's a half acre.
Half acre?
Mm-hmm.
And did your mother grow a garden? Did y'all have hogs or chickens?
We didn't have hogs.
Mm-hmm.
We had chickens. In fact, she had chickens there almost until she died. We had a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And we had those from the time when we were when did we get our cow? We had our cow when the last time we was on the Duncan White farm. See, we moved Duncan White farm was kind of not a ping pong thing. But we moved three different times on
right.
this farm. And that's why the period is all broken up.
Mm-hmm.
One time when Dad was at the WPA, next time we moved, the last time we moved from his farm to the Johnny Wilson farm. And from the Johnny Wilson farm, we moved to our own house.
Right. And was it at that time when you started working in the local pack houses and warehouses around here?
It was about the same time,
right.
But about the same era of time when I started working at the warehouses when we built our house. Because I lived in the edge of town,
mm-hmm.
and we farmed some even after that, a different acreage we farmed,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have a farm per se. We just had like 3 acres of cotton, 5 acres of cotton. 2 acres of tobacco or something. My father had farming in his blood.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody had some land and he could get his hands on it, he would plant something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a farmer at heart. But he also worked at the sawmill. And when I left home, and I left home in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
They left home in 1956. And they spent 11 years in New Jersey.
So they did?
Yeah. And my father worked in a steel yard.
Now, mm-hmm. why did they move to New Jersey in 1956?
Well, it was just the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they could go.
Was just the two of them, and two people can't farm.
Right. Okay.
So his baby sister was in New Jersey, and they told him that there were jobs there in the steel yard, and of course he had worked in the Norfolk Naval Shipyard during the time of World War II when they were building sinkable ships, I call them. But he worked there for a period of time, so he had some experience working in steel and.
Mm-hmm.
He went back to went to New Jersey, worked there for 11 years, and unfortunately they had an accident there, and he almost lost his foot.
Hmm.
A piece of steel fell out on it, and of course he was laid up for a little over a year, and when he finally got use of his foot and leg again, they moved back to South Carolina.
Yeah. Was your...
And they both died here.
And about what time was that?
Oh, now that's your email. I guess I blocked it out. I don't like to remember it.
Oh, okay.
It was it was in the 70s.
Okay.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Do you know if your father was involved with the union in New Jersey when he worked at the steel mill?
No, because New Jersey had no, they were very clandestine about it, and that was more or less kind of a private steel yard.
Okay.
And in fact, when he had that accident, they declared bankruptcy to keep from being sued because it was their fault. They had a magnetic electromagnetic crane picking up the steel,
mm-hmm.
which had been written up many times that it should have been replaced,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did was it picked up a piece of steel and it let go, and he couldn't get out of the way fast enough, and it almost took his foot off. But they were able to save it. But the state of New Jersey paid him off,
mm-hmm.
but nowhere near what he should have gotten,
right.
but they paid him off. It was adequate enough for them to leave and come back and rehab the house. And they had many good years here. I visited them many, many times, me and my children, and they were happy. And that's basically what you get out of life.
Right.
You know, they were able to live out their senior years.
Mm-hmm.
And in a place that they liked and they enjoyed. And what made them happy made me happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go? You said you left in
1955.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to?
I graduated from Brockton High School. That was the year before the integration.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined the Navy, and I went to training in Great Lakes, Illinois, and went on to San Diego, California after my training, and joined a fighter squadron,
mm-hmm.
at Moffett Field. And of course, I went overseas three times, sailed on three carriers.
Any combat?
No, I was, went to combat as far as you do,
yeah.
as you go. I mean, I was in Korea,
okay.
Korean action. And I went to all the ports in the Far East. I went to Philippines. I went to Hong Kong, I went to Guam, Iwakuni, Okinawa, Midway, went to all of the islands in between, of course Hawaii and all around.
Now, as someone who grew up in rural South Carolina, going to the Far East,
mm-hmm.
must have been a culture shock or a different experience, because I don't know how to say it, but it's a different world, right?
Yes and no.
Okay, well, tell me.
Well,
what did you think?
Yeah. First of all, the transition is probably hard for you to understand,
mm-hmm.
that the transition of integration, okay, the school process, I think, is probably easier to adjust to than
mm-hmm.
anything else, because as odd as it may seem, the same things that you would normally encounter in the South, you encountered in all of the places that I named that I travel in, because
right.
the people there takes their their inherited culture with them. So we would see the same people in the Philippines, the same people in even though you saw other people, it never diluted the American culture to the point that you didn't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, yes, it was different. It was a culture shock. It was different in the sense that you had a different relationship with the people where you were at.
Mm-hmm.
But you always had the in the back of your mind, you knew that in the end, you were coming back to America.
Right.
Okay. And even though America and the military changed things, they change your relationships. They change. But it was changing, yet it was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably the point that you know, it's more of a culture shock to come back from the West Coast here than it is to come back from a foreign country here,
yeah,
to America. Yeah. Because if you're in any place where you run into Americans, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you always have this thing of people kind of reminding you of something. They say, "Where are you from?"
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, "Well, where are you from?" You know. And as if to say, "I expect something different out of you."
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's a different culture shock to come back here after 54 years than it was to come back from overseas to America.
And I do want to get to mm-hmm. why you came back, but I guess I have one question. Mrs. Harrison, when did you meet Mrs. Harrison? Did she travel with you on these trips, or did she stay in California or here?
No, she's my second wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I make so many assumptions.
No. She's from here, just like I was from
mm-hmm.
here. Okay, as you grow older, you have things that transpire in your family that bring you back. I came back here when my biological father died.
Mm-hmm.
When my biological father died, I came back for his funeral. And that's when I met her. Mm-hmm. My wife had died of cancer early on, and her husband died of cancer. So we were both widowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back, I had a sister here in Timminsville who introduced me to her. But I didn't know her before, even though her older brother was my classmate in high school.
At Brockington?
At Brockington.
At Brockington.
Mm-hmm. But she was younger. She's younger than I am.
We are the same age. You ain't caught with me.
And so I can vaguely remember her,
uh-huh.
but not on that level.
My sister and I grew up yeah. together right next door.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
She grew up with my sister.
Okay. Yeah. And where were you in Timminsville?
In town.
In town? On what street?
Same street. I'm on that Clifford Street. Almost the same spot, except it's different.
Right.
The spot is all across the street. But, yeah, I'm right in Timminsville until I graduated.
See, when I came back to Timminsville, I never met or never ran into her
mm-hmm.
because I came back to visit my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I basically had my children with me, and of course I was married,
mm-hmm.
and so there was no, and she wasn't even here
mm-hmm.
in Timminsville. She was in Maryland, so we didn't meet. I didn't even know about her or whatever, you know.
That's one of those things. And I have vowed never Never. To come back to Timminsville to live, never. My sister and I.
And I left Timminsville for good in 55. In fact, I told my mother when I left, and she asked me, when will you be back? And I told her, I said, it'll be a long, long, long time. But after they returned to Timminsville, I would come back. And I made it a part of my family routine. Mm-hmm. And I would come home every 5 years. At least every 5 years, a minimum. And so I came back, I brought my children, we drove cross country, about, what, 2 or 3 times. One time just me and the children traveled. We were on a month's vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a travel trailer, and I pulled my travel trailer all the way here and brought them, and we stayed a couple of weeks here. And then my daughter became a youth leader on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought a whole van load of young people from California to Florida. We went down to Miami for a youth convention.
Mm-hmm.
Every trip that I would make, we always came through South Carolina.
Right.
And spent 2 or 3 days or more.
Mm-hmm.
So stayed in touch with
him. Mm-hmm.
And in touch with Timothy.
Right. Now, why did y'all say that y'all would never come back?
To Timothy?
Right. I mean,
memories.
Hell no. Okay, when we built our house here, it was probably the best years that I had in Timminsville.
Right, okay.
The best 2 years that I had in Timminsville. I mean, that was kind of the climax of the progress that we had made from the farm, from sharecropping to renting to living with our cousin on his farm. And then when we got to our own house,
mm-hmm.
where we were no longer really farm, more or less at that point, we were working on a different level. I was working at the warehouse. My mom and dad were still somewhat connected to the farm, but we didn't see that farm as our main means of survival.
Mm-hmm.
And when I graduated from high school, in fact, I think it was about 4 months before I ever graduated or more, I had already made arrangements to join the service. I knew I was leaving. I had it arranged the day we graduated on Friday night. And I was a bus driver, so I had to bring the kids to school on Saturday morning to get their report cards.
Right.
I turned the bus in that Saturday evening over in Florence out there at the old airport.
Yeah.
They brought us back over here to Timminsville, and I said my goodbyes. And the guys was just kidding me because they were saying, like, I said, I'm leaving Monday morning. They were like, yeah, right. And Monday morning, I was in Florence at 6:30 in the morning to catch the bus to go to Columbia. And it was nonstop. Columbia, down the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And Great Lakes, I went through my training in 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left Great Lakes, I think I had 10 days, and I came back here for 10 days. When I came back here for 10 days, the whole place had changed. It's like it had evaporated or something. And I couldn't wait to catch the train going to California.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, and basically it was nonstop. California, and once we got out there, I was training with my squadron. We were going to the desert for training and different, and out to sea was where I got acquainted with a carrier. And carrier has 3 times almost as many people at that mm-hmm. point as Timminsville had. You know, 5,000 people was on the ship. You know, and then you couldn't believe it. You know, and I was continuously moving and overseas and then Japan and mm-hmm. the Philippines, and like you say, a lot of different cultural changes. And I guess it did affect me a lot.
Right.
But I never came home on leave.
Right.
And once I got in the military, I never came home on leave. When I came back home, I was married with 2 children.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, you know.
You mentioned earlier that you graduated from school right before the Brown decision.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned that you had worked with, your family had worked for white farmers.
Right.
And they seemed to have two different attitudes towards their black farmers. One was a sharecropping only, one allowed you to rent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also curious to know if race relations in the town was another reason why you didn't want to come back, especially since, you know, you had no farm. You said that, it's not like you didn't have a farm, but that, you didn't want a farm, and you had your house out on Honda Way.
Yeah.
And so I was just curious if that was another reason to get out of a small town like Timminsville.
Well, I don't think that Timminsville offered anything.
Right.
There was a limited amount of jobs that you could do here.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact I didn't have the opportunity. Once I left here and went to the West Coast, I had to avail myself of what was there.
Right.
Okay. I went to school, I went to college, I went at night. I had to go at night. I worked in the daytime, okay? I mean, what happened was is I got married at an early age. I got married at an early age and started having children. Well, I had to go to school at night because I had to work during
right.
the daytime and take care of the family. But once you get into a certain mode of what you're doing, you can't just change it.
Right.
And I couldn't do here what I was doing out there.
Right.
Yeah. So everything that I was doing, I had to gear it to the West Coast. Otherwise, I would be in trouble.
Now, what city did you live in?
I lived in Berkeley.
You live in Berkeley?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
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 In fact, I live in Berkeley on the edge of the University of California campus.
And what school did you go to out there?
I went to Merritt College.
Marriott?
No, Merritt.
Oh, Merritt.
College.
Okay. And in an earlier conversation, you told me that you worked for Department of Social Services out there.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more specifically what you did?
I've done like we did on farming. I've done a whole lot of things. I worked in about a half a dozen different departments. When I retired, I was an eligibility worker.
Yeah.
Okay. I worked in accounting. I worked in. I started in the basement, as they say. I started in the basement and worked my way to the fifth floor. I was an instructor in accounting for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at.
Is that your degree?
No.
Oh. Assumption.
No, but I had about 8 years of background and experience in accounting. But I did take accounting in college, but. No, that wasn't much better. I just worked at the. When I started with social service,
mm-hmm.
I was doing like going to school, but I was also doing on the job training.
Okay.
And after about 5 years in a field, you're considered to be, they give you what I call a rating. You're considered to be an expert in. And I was an expert, considered to be an expert in budgeting,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what I did for those years. I worked in budgeting.
My interview have to be tomorrow. I'm not as long-winded because I don't have all that to say. But I think we have to go bro, so I can get me something to eat.
Okay.
You didn't hear my stomach.
No,
it did it about three times. I think you only heard it once. I'm old.
Anyway, I work for the Bureau. I work for Social Services. I also work for the Sheriff's Department. I was in the Bureau of Identification and the Sheriff's Department. I was a supervisor. But all of these are kind of in related fields across the board. And so, if I could see something that I wanted to do, I would cross over here.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, for the experience more.
Okay. I'm going to ask one last question.
No problem.
Just because we need, this is something I told you I wanted to ask you. So why did y'all come back? Since we're wrapping up. Okay.
I came every year with my kids up until 81.
Mm-hmm.
My mom passed away in 81. And went back up there. And then my dad passed away in 87. And so that was it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we left down here as far as that close, my sister and I.
Yeah.
And so we always say we would never come back down here because actually, even when I came out of school, they didn't, like you said, they didn't have anything really to offer you. I was going to go to college, but then I realized that my parents, we didn't have transportation. And there was no way for me to get, I could get a ride to state university, but I'd have to stay at least by the month because it was no way for me to go and come back, you know, and so I thought about that and I wasn't going to put them to any trouble trying to try to work to get her in a car like or whatever. My mom did domestic work, possibly ever since in the early 40s, I imagine, and I knew that was something I didn't want to do. And she said that, I remember her always saying, I want my children to finish school, there's three of us. And she said, I want my children to finish school. Because I was not able to.
Mm-hmm.
When I came, she came up without a mother. She came up with an older sister raising the family, a large family.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on the farm, but that isn't the farm in Darlington. But it, not that one anyway. But when I left to go be a nurse. Because everybody said I was going to be a nurse for, I really know I wanted to be a nurse. I'm always taking care of children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always want to follow Dolly. But anyway, went up there and I was a little late for getting everything in. And so they told me if I was going to start John Hopkins, I probably would have to start in January. Another hospital say the same thing because you gotta have everything in by April of the year before, the year earlier. So anyway, my aunt took me back and I babysat for about 2 months. And I know that's what I wasn't gonna do because I had made up my mind early in life that I was not gonna stay down here in Timminsville. They have nothing to offer. And I was not gonna be having babies unless I was married. And I had to have me some kind of career for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. And I got a job in a factory. And I worked, and there were older people there. And they would always tell us, you're not going to stay here unless you go to school. You are going to college. You're going to school. Y'all the young people ain't coming. This is not no job for no young people. But for me, it was good for me because my name was on a check.
Right.
And it wasn't much. And the bank would not let us cash our check there. We could cash, but we had to pay $5. Otherwise, you had to get it cash somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And not having transportation, so I started with that bank, Provident Bank. And that was our way of saving. I didn't know that then.
Mm-hmm.
But this is why they say you had to pay the $5, then they would cash it for nothing. Because the $5 were in your savings.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Cortez Peters, was just a business school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just brought up my typing. I took business math and business English. And then I had a stump in the road. Then in 61, 3 years later, I came back down here with my mom for 3 months. because I was pregnant. And we were supposed to get married, but after I had my baby and getting married my baby, I didn't want to get married. So anyway, I asked my mom, and anyway, she gave me good advice and stuff. So I went on back to my job, because the people kept telling my sister, when she come back, tell her to come back here. She got a job at the job there. And then, whatever, went on married next year, and life went on. So in the all, it was 42 years. Now, where I came back was a home that fell on property that my parents, that we had bought when we were children. And my mom said it was our house as well, as I lost my brother in 79. He was the oldest. So the property was in my sister and I name, and it's two lots together. And so my sister and I tried to give it away, and that's honest true. We got so much of flight behind that stuff, but we tried to give that house and that land away. But anyway, God had it, so it didn't work out that way. So I came back. I got convinced that if I came back to South Carolina, it was better for my husband, his health, because this was a sunny place, and we up there in Maryland. I asked him to give me 3 years before I could really say I'd come back down here. And that's what he did, and I worked my way. And then a month and a half before, he died. Then I didn't know what to do. Because I had went to nursing school, my kids was out on their own, except my daughter, and we came down twice to pick out a trailer and that kind of thing. And I had my license changed over for South Carolina. So I didn't know what to do. I said, I guess I was supposed to go down. So anyway, I came down, and that's how I ended up back down here.
And that was,
I came down the last of 99.
And were y'all together in 1999?
No, that was her first husband that died.
Yeah, I had made that assumption. You're here.
I started working at McLeod, and worked at McLeod for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I decided, because I'd been in nursing for quite a while, and I was really stressed out and drained, but I didn't know it. Because, you know, you do what you have to do. And I remember the lady at Social Security told me before I left them up there, she said, Miss Beatty, she said, when you get down, you're going outside. She said, well, when you become 62, you just going on your husband's thing. She said, you actually need rest. You are stressed. Well, the lady didn't know me. You know, that's my attitude. She didn't know me for me just going down there, but she appreciated what I did when I went down there. So anyway, and I came back here and I started working. And it was a different, it was different. Down here. It was really, really different. And so I worked there for about almost 2 years, not quite 2 years, probably 2 years, but that's about it. And I decided to go on with a spectrum, that's what I did. And I started opening my eyes, which the nurses told me that in the hospital, you need to open your eyes and look. All you do is work. And so that's what I did. I went to ages. And I work on staff, like on call. Stay down here. Then there, I guess about, I met you in 2003.
That's when we met.
About 2003, really. Because when you run Christmas time, so when you
know, after Christmas. It was in December, yeah.
The last. Just talked.
And we used up so much airtime until finally one day I told her, I said, but we can do better than this.
I thought nothing of California. After talking to him, I looked at the map. I said, good Lord, no wonder we do this. I'm falling off the East Coast and he's falling off the West Coast. I said, good. How did this happen?
We ran up a 1,000 plus cell phone bill.
Whoa.
When that bill came and hit me, and I said, no. When I pay this bill, I can buy two plane tickets and a no.
Well, he called any time of day, and there was a difference in the hours.
Right, right.
I travel, go back to Baltimore, whatever. He called, we were all over, and I'm we just talking from California. And people just thought we were talking from right here, I guess. Nobody knew.
She don't, they didn't know.
Nobody knew.
Okay, and
the rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history. Fell in love, came back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't quite that easy. It made what? Long trips coast to coast, and I had her out there for almost 3 months. Well, she was out there for 3 months. Even longer than that one. And then she gets homesick, and I want to go home. And she fly home, and I start saying, when are you coming back? You need to come down here.
So you did?
Yeah, so I did. I even tricked her one time. I told her, I said, I was talking to her on the phone, and she said, what did you ask me? You asked me, where are you or something? I said, I'm driving up in the yard.
He did. He told me. I said, I didn't believe
it.
Yeah. I'm driving up in the yard.
Say, I'll be there sometime.
The
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it worked out.
Yeah.
It wasn't what we planned. And sometimes now we look at each other and say, why? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And we get out there on the West Coast, and we were out there, but last year, I only said, we're going home. And that sounds funny to both of them when we say it, but we say, well, we're going home.
Yeah.
But that's what we do.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we do.
All right.
It's worked out. I don't really know. We tried to figure out what was it that why were we here, and I said, well, there's something that we have to do, and I guess that's what
working
we
with the seniors and mm-hmm. everybody they just took us to be their children, and people are so nice, and then different ones are coming back from different areas mm-hmm. that we go down here, you know, and so we can relate a lot. More now about in the 50s and actually I was stuck in the 50s. The whole lot of generations are gone. Even though we came down in the summer like a week, my kids actually, you'll ask the oldest one or something, the other two oldest ones, which one called me, and they'll say, where are you from? And he'll tell me in a minute, I'm from Timminsville. Because they grew up coming down here every year. My mother lived, we came down every year. And they knew this was Tom Bevin, me and I was born and raised here.
Yeah.
She has four children, and I have four children.
No, oh, that's a big family for Christmas.
Yeah,
we got eight, and we got grandchildren.
And we got grandchildren on both coasts. We just spent a family reunion in Virginia when I went up to Williamsburg, Virginia, and my daughter and her husband and my grandson flew out from California.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they just arrived back in California yesterday.
After visiting you here?
Huh?
After visiting you?
Well, they visited, they did more than just visit us.
Okay.
They visited, the family became a family reunion.
Oh, yeah.
They went to Washington, D.C., Smithsonian, White House, and they just did the whole bit in Washington.
And yeah.
Then I had, because she's a real history, she's a planner. For the county of Monterey.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
So anyway, she got back and yesterday she was telling me about her dreams. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Okay.
So we've had a good time. We've enjoyed it. We have our children now, not her and mine. I just say everyone now. Our son and his wife had us up for Father's Day weekend in Chicago. We spent 4 days up there.
It's nice.
And they just treated us like it was royal. We had a great time in Chicago. And they took us out to the House of Blues for brunch
and
on
gospel.
Sunday morning gospel
celebration
up there.
That was
so nice. and then a tour of the city.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was.
Did you go on the, one of the boats or?
No, he's been there now for years. And
yeah.
His tours are better than the boats. Because it lasted for what, like 3 days. I think every day was a tour. Every day was a tour.
Took me to your old stomping ground.
Yeah,
Great Lakes.
Took me out the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
I hadn't been to Great Lakes ever since. And took me, we went out on the base and went to the canteen and, and everything, and it was just.
It's something being a kid.
Yeah, it was something being a kid all over again.
Not bad.
Yeah, it really was. And we went to a picnic. And, oh, they had it planned. I tell you, it was great.
I got to go to exercise with the daughter.
She went with.
I ain't got the curves down here yet. Man, I'm sitting in the car. I don't think I had to get over there to curves.
Our daughter-in-law took her on grand tour of her studios where she does the exercises and the curve thing.
And the curves. That's the place.
The curve for the curve.
Mm-hmm.
So they spent the whole morning. They had their time. We had our time. Yeah.
She says only for the ladies.
So it was really nice.
They're
by the suburbs. They live in Evanston.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
Yeah.
Was nice.
Yeah.
And we put us in the blue room. In the blue room up on the top floor.
Right.
We're nice and quiet. And we're so quiet. And I said, honey, yeah, I think it's raining. Well, you know, just like kids, we were laughing because when our family reunion was held at a resort.
Mm-hmm.
Timeshare resort, so everybody had their own individual, you know, accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so tickled. My grandson, he was up on the third floor at the resort in the loft. He says, "I sleep in this bed, Grandpa." I said, "Yeah." And that one over there, I put my clothes on. He said, "That window there, it went over." He said, "But when the lightning, you can see the lightning just lights up the room, and because they had thunderstorms."
Yeah.
Well, they had a terrible thunderstorm that night when we were there, and they were trying to get us out of the hotel to go to the banquet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to no banquet. It's storming out there.
Not with that.
Oh, thunder and lightning. So y'all go ahead on and come out. Well, gee, if you don't go to the banquet, you can come for the dance. Oh, yeah, right. Watch me dance the lightning. But it's a time when we get to enjoy the family. And, I just had my, last year we were in California for my grandson's graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And he graduated from Berkeley High School. And he's a musician, so he's went to Berkeley School of Music in Boston.
So Berkeley to Berkeley.
Yeah, yes. Berkeley to Berkeley now. So
that's great.
Yeah,
to go to Berkeley.
Right, then we had another granddaughter to graduate. We'll be in Orangeburg. We on the go all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I spent Mother's Day up there.
And then our son, he graduated from, he's a warrant officer. And then, I mean, there's the two graduations for him. Yeah. They keep us going.
I bet.
Yeah. So we enjoy, I think the one thing about it is we also recognize that by being in the Timminsville area, we're kind of in the center of things where we can go a lot of different directions. Because we still have family and having birthdays and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't be going there if we were on the West Coast, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But that's kind of a little overview.
Yeah.
You only touch the surface.
Oh, I know.
You're right about that.
But it's fascinating.
Yeah. But
It really is.
No, we had no real idea about coming back to Timminsville because nothing that we were doing in life would have prepared us for this.
Yeah, it would have pointed you back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're raising families, trying to give them the best push forward that we could. And I think we were able to do that.
Sounds like y'all did.
Yeah. So at least I'm satisfied.
Yeah. Okay. I should let y'all go and get some lunch.
I'm going to take her and get her some food.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me, uh-oh.